This episode is brought to you by Visit Williamsburg. In Williamsburg, Virginia, there's never too much of a good thing. Whether you're a foodie, a golfer, a history buff, a shopaholic, an outdoor enthusiast, or a thrill seeker, you'll find what you came for here and more. So ask yourself, what is it you want? Discover Williamsburg and plan your trip at visitwilliamsburg.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Let's go.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to Binge Town TV. We are back for spooky season, as we always are, with Mike Flanagan's new little haunt, the Midnight Club. Also, how dare he, after Midnight Mass, do Midnight Club? How many times are we going to flub that?
Just yeah, saying. Right.
So we're going to cover the first two episodes. Episode one, titled The Final Chapter. Episode two, titled The Two Danas. First we had Hill House, then we had Bly Manor, then we had the entire creepy fucking island from Midnight Mass, and now we have Brightcliff, which I also want to call Breakbills.
What's that from, Kathleen?
That's from The Magicians, which we also cover, everybody.
We do.
But welcome Jimmy back. He's been gone for what seems like all of time from his wedding.
Yeah, so I haven't podcasted Jimmy in like 6 weeks, probably. Feels good to be back.
It's Mr. Jimmy now.
Yeah.
For anyone listening, if you'd rather watch us, go check us out on YouTube. You know, we're not bad looking. We're really not. All right. Before we jump in, I have two things. One, I want to shout out the Newton Brothers for some more sick, sexy, haunting music. And number two, I want to ask the crowd, who is your favorite character and why is it Anya? And do we agree with that? Actually,
we're gonna just go for it right away, huh? I was gonna save characters for the end, but if you are asking the group, I'll start.
Yeah, let's do it.
So what I want to say first is, like, I love Mike Flanagan so much. He single-handedly has gotten me into this genre, and I almost don't even want to watch anything in this genre that's not made by him, because I just expect such high quality, just amazing writing, and like, oh, and it's just so interesting how he uses horror as like the backdrop to tell these crazy, creepy stories. So I love Flanagan. Just, I was so ready to jump into another type of show like this, because it's been a while. It's been since Midnight Mass last year. Mm-hmm. And I agree, Kathleen. I can't believe he named this Midnight Club too. I even named our group chat Midnight Mass, and nobody said anything for a freaking day. I was like, what the hell? But anyway, back to the show. First thing I want to say is that I think I like every single character. Like, every single person in the Midnight Club is likable in their own way. I was thinking as I was watching the episode, who's my favorite character? I was jumping back and forth between people. And I think what I'm settled on after two episodes is I'm a Kevin guy. Okay, cool. So it doesn't seem like that's like a super
hot take. Yeah, no, I like Kevin.
Anya was someone that I knew someone was going to pick, and I couldn't decide if she's like the best or just like the most entertaining, you know? So right now, just, I'll explain it as we're going through the episode, but I'm a Kevin guy, and Inesh is a close second, but he doesn't have enough screen time for me to really pick him. And then, of course, you know, QB1, let's go.
QB1, baby. Inesh has the video game. He hooked me up because the first, like, maybe what, half hour, I'm going, okay, I know it's not present day, and I know it's back in the day. I'm trying to figure out time periods here. And then he says, PlayStation's about to come out in September. And I was like, all right. So then I looked that up. And I mean, they talk about Radiohead and stuff like that. So we know we're early 90s here.
Just for the record, they opened the title saying Sacramento in 1994.
Wow, that's hilarious. Is it in the top or the bottom?
It was like right the first screen before you see Ilanka like dyeing her hair in the tub.
I'm a rusty ass podcaster. The one thing I do want to say, though, actually, is we're patting ourselves on the back here. We have screeners from Netflix. So obviously there's a watermark at the top and it's a big one saying, you know, property of Netflix and our email and this and that. So it covers a good amount at the top of the screen. And then the episode starts, for me at least, with the subtitles at the top too. So it was covering a lot at first, and then it goes to the bottom and it was all good. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I don't want to diss myself here, but I was actually having to watch on my phone because I'm in a new house and I'm trying to figure out how to, I don't have a TV yet and this and that. So I'm watching on a little teeny phone. So yeah, I guess I missed that, but I like to figure it out in my own way what the time period is.
Dude, right there with you, Jimmy. I don't know how the hell it happened, but I'm like taking notes. I'm like, they're using a Cord phone. So we know, like, by the make of the car model, you know, it's got to be early. And then, dude, she gets
it's
on the
just
computer.
So much better to do it that way. It's so much better to do it that way.
That's real detective work.
But real quick, I'll just say, I was going to say, if not Anya, Kevin was my other guy.
Kev, dude.
Like that.
It's great to see Warren from Midnight Mass back, you know, that actor is back playing. So a few other, you know, familiar faces. We'll get to them when we get to them. But like you're saying, QB1 looks so weird with the, you know, not buzzed head now. Just because it's just from Midnight Mass.
Yeah.
And he's actually happy and like smiling instead of. Right.
Well, he started Midnight Mass with regular hair, and then he comes back from jail prison with the buzz cut, right?
Yeah, because of Robin Sparkles.
Right, Robin Sparkles tears him up, but it's I think we were talking about Zach Guilford, who's we keep saying QB1 for all the fans of Friday Night Lights. That's Zach Guilford, Matt Saracen. He's playing the nurse practitioner in the hospice, and. In Midnight Mass, we were saying how he kind of seems like he's the same character, or at least acts the same way in every show he's in. And he does seem like the overly nice guy in this as well. But I do think he's not fully Saracen so far in the first two episodes. He doesn't seem like the shy, like, you know, like he just Kathleen, you were saying you've seen him in other things. I've really only seen him in Friday Night Lights and Midnight Mass. And to me, like, they were very, very, very similar. I did get a little bit of a different vibe from this one.
I totally agree, Jimmy. I've only been exposed to him through those two shows as well. And I thought that was like the charm of his acting, was a little bit socially awkward. And I was floored by him being normal in this.
Yeah.
Like
yeah,
he actually was like the way he spoke, it was a different person. And I'm happy that he didn't kind of lean into the same type of character, because he seems like he's going to be a really good guy, which means something really bad's probably going to happen to him. So.
Or he's going to turn to be really bad and we didn't know it.
Yes, that too. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Ready to jump in?
Let's
so
do
I
it.
Have this in buckets, and the bucket number one is called "This Fucking Blows. I'm sorry, Alanka," pre-Brightcliff. Okay. So we begin our journey in Sacramento, 1994.
Dude, I totally knew that.
We get our main character, Alanka. She's writing her salutatorian speech. Basically, Alanka's this like super sweet, super charming nerd, one of this like type of character who worked really hard their whole life and never really got to party. And now they're eventually gonna like go out and party. Then we get introduced to her stepdad or foster dad, Tim, who I'm gonna affectionately call Hopper moving forward, because he literally is Hopper from Stranger Things. But they also name drop a Maggie. We didn't get exactly who that was. Seems like maybe a foster mom who passed. What'd you guys think?
Yeah.
Yeah. I took it fully as his wife, and you know, she calls him Tim. So, you know, she would call her Maggie, not mom and dad, I guess. So I definitely took it like that.
I wonder if we're going to get any backstory there, because, you know, Flanagan likes to plant seeds and then expand upon them later. So maybe we'll find out. But I just thought it was her mom or foster mom, either one.
Yeah. I mean, it looks like when she puts the pictures on her shelf that the mom was wearing like a scarf on her head at one picture. And it might not even be Maggie, and it might just be me trying to look into things, but maybe it was that her mom also had a situation with cancer or something. Obviously, we're looking at, you know, a premature death for, you know, her foster mother, because the father, Tim, is young as well. So we'll get some more. I believe Hopper. Yes. Let's get this on the board here. So we're going to call Tim Hopper. I'm calling Kevin Kevbot. That's just how I do it. That's how I roll. little hot rod for you, Andy Samberg.
I have a bunch more nicknames too.
QB1.
Like QB1's good. Yeah. Or I was going to call him Marky Mark, but that's fine. all right. So now moving forward, we're at this college party. Her and her friend goes, another classic move in one of these. She meets this guy. They're talking about literature. And then she starts coughing up blood, of course. So brutal, brutal for our girl. She goes home. She starts Googling the shit out of Brightcliff I might have jumped to something.
Well, yeah, you find that it jumps to the diagnosis, but yeah, I'll jump in really quick. So, you know, we have her coughing up blood, and immediately I'm just wondering, just thinking about the premise of this show, it's like, this is going to be dark. You know, I'm thinking is it going to be too dark? And when I say dark, I mean like depressing, sad, just because you're dealing with your main characters, knowing that they're going to be dying at the end. You know, obviously, you know, they're going to be in a hospice situation. So I was wondering if it was going to be like too dark or too sad to like enjoy, but totally wrong already. Yeah. Two episodes in, totally wrong. Yeah. It's been a lot of fun so far.
So the coughing blood thing turns into that the first yes. time we get the vision, right? Mm-hmm. And there's not much you can really take from the vision. There's like this Reaper character with the hood that's going to be important, I'm sure. But what I wanted to bring up is what this means is that whatever the mystery and the curse is around, what's it called again? Brightcliff isn't tied.
Brightcliff. Yeah.
Brightcliff. Where the hell did I get Brightlife from?
All right, probably autocorrected.
Whatever it is, that's going to be like a curse or the shadow thing. It's not exclusively tied to the actual hospice because this happens at the college party. And that's just something I wanted to like put out there. It's not going to be something tied to the cult that used to own the grounds. Hey,
it might be bringing her to the hospice. It might be guiding her to the hospice. It
gave her a flash of Brightcliff.
She sees
Brightcliff for a second. So that's why later after the diagnosis, she has papillary thyroid carcinoma. She speedily gets like, they're like, we'll see how it goes. And then it speedily gets to like, oh shit. She obviously went through chemo. They give her maybe a year. It's terminal. And when she's like researching up a storm, she gets another kind of flash. When she sees Brightcliff, she remembers it, even though she's never seen it before. So it's like one of those things. It's like another like kind of jump scare type deal when she's researching.
Mm-hmm. And then when you get the flash, you also see people around the table that she ends up finding out as the Midnight Club. So, you know, it is definitely there. We'll talk about a lot because there's going to be Anya seeing flashes. There's going to be Anya's story being a little confusing because that's kind of fabricated slash also probably part of her backstory. But at the same time, it seems like the devil that she's talking about is appearing the same way that they're seeing flashes, or they're seeing like the flashes of the bad guy or whatever it is. So we'll get into it.
Yeah. And there's honestly, this whole researching scene on the internet while she's at the hospital does drop us a lot of little clues. Like we said, this is where she first hears about Brightcliff. Also, she learns about Julia Jane, right? Mm-hmm. That was her name.
AJ.
Sees that article, and that's kind of what really gives her hope to go to Brightcliff and kind of get cured. And just to go to the visions part, there was like Luke said, the main Reaper figure at the head of the table with the hood. We see that quite often. And then we keep getting this older lady. And then we got one quick shot of this old guy with overalls, but he had like a shirt and tie. He looked like a shoe shiner. So like, I don't know where he's going to come into play. But of course, we got the big bench next to the cliff. Is that why they call it Brightcliff?
Could be
because of the giant cliff there.
Totally.
So we get that bench a lot too, and we'll get to it when we meet Kevin. But he kind of looks like Kevin, and he looks like he's wearing the same stuff. So,
I mean, speaking of Kevin, let's bring Kevbot in or whatever Jimmy called him. So Hopper takes Alonka to Brightcliff against his will. Basically, he doesn't want to do it. Of course, who would want to like send your daughter off for her last year into a hospice away from you? But when they get there, she beelines it straight to that bench on the hill. And her and Kevin act like they know each other. They seem familiar, which is interesting because the place itself felt familiar to her, even though she's never been. So do you guys have any theories around this, or no, it's just kind of like the vibe from the house?
without jumping too far ahead, but episode two, we do get Anya kind of having these like flashes and visions too a little bit. Like after seeing that, you think like, okay, is Kevin having it too? But nobody's really saying anything to each other about it because they think they're all, you know, going crazy from the meds and just dying. So I would like to think that Kevin thinks that he knows Alanka or that she's at least similar because he's having the same similar flashes.
Yeah. They have that situation where they both say, I think I know you. And she says, I'm from Sacramento. And he says, I've never been there. That's weird. And she obviously says deja vu when she sees the place and everything like that. I'm going to be under the impression for now that they're all seeing the same flashes. They're all seeing the same things and they're just chalking it up to their medication or something like that. We got proof for Anya. I'm not sure if we got any proof for anybody else yet. I know that they do talk about some creepiness to the hospice at certain times. They talk about the elevator going up and down by itself, but we also found out that that's also Anya going to the midnight club in the middle of the night. She uses the elevator, things like that. I was going to say, like, is it something similar to how Haunting of Hill House was where we have our girl Nell coming back to the house, like the house is calling to her? Like, did this hospice place call to these kids to bring them to the place? You know, it seems like from their explanation when Kevbot talks to our girl, he says like, oh, you're not here by chance. Like, you looked it up yourself. So it seems like the rest of them are here by some kind of chance. You know, they even say that, I don't have the girl's name offhand, but the one that has all the stories and the rich parents and everything, they're like, why is she here? She could be at the most expensive hospice that ever existed. We know that the grandma or the nanny, I'm sorry, popped up and dropped her off in a Mercedes or whatever they said. And that part of the story is true, that she probably has a lot of money. So how the heck did she end up there? Things like that. So I'm wondering if it is going to be something like the it's getting called to. I mean, there's got to be something to the cult thing. I mean, I just feel like why would you bring it up unless you're just trying to like creep us out as part of a ghost story?
Could be red herring too.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, 100%.
The cult compound knowledge kind of gets dropped right around here because Mark's going through and giving the tour right after the Kevin scene, and we get that information, and I'm all about it. The cult seems like such a fun take because I don't think that Flanagan's really explored this sort of horror yet. And it's very also Paul Sandman-esque with the whole cult. Yeah. So that's just stuck in my head right now. I'm very interested in that. But does this mean that like just the Midnight Club is being pulled in by this shadow spirit thing and like they're all being pulled for a purpose? Or is this something that's been because Kevin says, I've heard this story about the shadow chasing people three or four different times, because it's probably true where people that are here all experiencing this
right
haunting. But does that mean like all of the people in the past have been pulled there for a purpose? Is it like the cult ghost is just feeding? Like, these are like the kind of question. Yeah. So it's, yeah. I'm curious where it goes, what connects everybody besides just terminal illness, I guess.
Yeah, jumping ahead a little bit, Luke, in episode two, we do get the scene where the old lady shows up again, the scary old lady, and she says, I'm so hungry, I'm starving. Maybe she feeds off every death, and maybe there hasn't been a death in a while. But we know that there was one that that the main character replaced, and Rachel. That must have been recent enough. But we do know her, too, the one who died, was saying, like you said, Luke, she was saying that there was somebody chasing her, and she was, you know, she felt like it was real, like something grabbing at her. And so I do think that fully everybody in at least the hospice situation, the terminal kids, are seeing it. I'm not sure if QB1 or the doctor see these people or these ghosts. I guess we'll get more to that later, but for now
they're in the cult.
Yeah, they could be. I mean, we know that the doctor, when she talks to the doctor about Julia and the cult, she said Paragon, she gets sketchy.
Yeah, definitely. Man,
she is textbook just evil.
She's bad guy number one for sure.
Yeah, for sure.
Without a doubt, she knows something that she's not letting on. So
she sacrificed her own son to that starving ghost. You right? know it.
She
you
was
know
in it. The cult. Yeah, she was in the cult.
You know it.
So just to meet her, we actually have Alanka look down the hallway. She sees that same old ghost lady, passes out, wakes up with Tim next to her bedside, and then actually the doctor in the room. And this is where we kind of get her first introduction. Just to jump back where we did have Mark introduce Alanka and Tim to the whole building, he did have a line, and this is me, you know, tinfoil hat, you know me. So montage of them driving in, they had like a bridge next to the beach. And then Mark is like, oh, how's the drive? And Tim's like, oh, it was good. And the NP is like, oh yeah, it can be a little dodgy at times. And I'm like, all right.
What's dodgy about it, dude?
Tim Ghost? Said he's staying away in the Motel 6 in case, you know, Alonka ever wants to call or anything. I am already assuming she calls, something happens. He tries to drive there and he can't get there.
Okay.
Maybe the bridge gets washed out.
That's a good foreshadow. I feel like there's definitely going to be a scene where she's calling him saying help. And he's just like, I can't get there. Yeah. I feel you there.
This is definitely bullshit. So
I don't even know who Mark is, though. I don't even know who you're talking about.
Mark is QB1.
Yeah, no, I'm kidding. I want you to call him QB1.
Sorry.
Okay. So, we're meeting Stanton, who is obviously, like we said, enemy number one. She's such a sketchbag. But at this point, she's winning Hopper over, right, Tim? Mm-hmm. She's winning him over with the relatability of she had a son that had passed as well. She wouldn't know how to talk to parents or to the kids without having had a son who died of cancer herself. And I like this conversation she has about, like, everyone's talking about battle. Like, it's so true. I love these stories for like the scariness and the plot, but this one is super interesting and unique because of the setting. Like this, just talk about the hospice. Like we're about to meet all these kids who know they're going to die. That's such an interesting place to be in, and they can act however the fuck they want to act. And it's sad, but they're still so funny and goofy. I love the setting. It's going to be really sad, but I also read an article today that this is based off of a book called The Midnight Club. And from the synopsis I got, I assume that Mike maybe added the scary stuff. It seemed like they just meet at midnight to tell stories.
Right.
But it's kind of like the calls coming from inside of the house, right? Like they're all dying, not because someone's killing them or a ghost or something, but because they're sick. Like interesting in that sense. So these people, like Jimmy said, are going to get picked off one by one, maybe because of scary stuff or maybe because they just are sick, which is really interesting. But yeah, anyway, I like Stanton's character. I can't wait till she's just like pure evil.
Yeah.
And Flanagan does this a lot in his shows, which is great. He has really serious, like, you know, almost not hypothetical, but really serious real life monologues almost that happen a lot in Midnight Mass. And here he's talking about cancer and just saying, you know, this is permission to leave the battlefield. It's not in terms of fight. So I just like when Flanagan puts, you know, real world, maybe philosophical things in there for you to think about.
Yeah. And the cool thing about a lot of Flanagan's work, Hill House, even Blind Manor, Turn of the Screw, it was called, right? You know, we have source material, but he puts his own story into it, because I don't know, I've never read a lot of these stories, and like you, Kathleen, I read the synopsis of the Midnight Club. I keep wanting to say Midnight Mass, but the Midnight Club, and it seems like he may have added the whole somebody got cured mystery into it, because the synopsis seems like it's like you were saying, Kathleen, I think it's five kids meet at night, and it's not even, like you said, scary stories. They're actually trying to like tell funny or nice or enlightening or crazy stories to just distract themselves. And, you know, he added it so it's more scary. And, you know, the stories, I think at the same time in the books too, the stories tell you a little bit about the characters, but that's going to be very interesting. We already got that with Anya, but, you know, adding the mystery to how someone got cured, that's his own twist. And obviously any of our listeners who have read the book, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think he did add that twist so that there's a little bit more of a mystery. And like you said, guys, he's making it scarier.
Yeah. And it's crazy if that's true, because that's the most thing. That's the thing I'm most interested in. It's like the cure and the mystery about Julia Jane. So he's a genius. Definitely. I always trust him. And it's probably we're not going to find out until literally the last 15 minutes of the of the series. But I wanted to say that Georgina Stanton, Dr. Georgina, she won me over in this scene. And I didn't realize she was like evil until the next scene, where they're kind of explicit about it. But I thought she had great charm, but also who had great charm in like a bad boy kind of way was Spence, just how he gives the whole tour to everybody. this was great. This is just textbook cinematography, or just writing of a basic show, just to quickly show all the players.
Yeah.
And I like every single one of them. And I want to just take back what I said about every single one of them. I don't think I'm sold on Sherry yet.
Yeah.
But everybody else.
I'll rip through them. So we've got Spence. So he goes on the ghost tour with Alanka. So they're doing yoga, which is this new thing, which is so fucking funny.
New agey shit.
With Natsuki and Sandra. Then they go to the library, they go to the arcade, and that's where Amesh is because he's a huge video game boy and he just wants to be hazed. That's his whole thing.
Yeah.
And we have the little elevator scene, which is cute, that he wanted to be hazed, but then they were like, no, actually don't go in there. It's the morgue, which
we're going into that morgue, man.
That's little Luke in the elevator just screaming all the way down.
That's the dumbwaiter, Kathleen.
That's a dumbwaiter. Then we have, is it Sherry or Sheree? I
think it's
Sheree,
isn't it?
So just like the boys?
Shelly? Mon ami?
I think she's actually an interesting character just because you just never know when she's lying. And I died laughing. I'm lying. I didn't die laughing. but I liked the scene with her and Anya where she's talking about the pets and she's like, you said there was three and now there's four. And she's like, well, one died. Thanks for reminding me. And she's like, oh, I can't tell if you're telling me the truth or if you're lying.
I love that scene too. Yeah.
She's an unreliable narrator. She really is.
Yeah.
She's the pathological liar and the rich one that Jimmy was talking about. And then Anya is her roommate, this fucking bad bitch. She is takes no shit, but the reason she is how she is because she's been there the longest and seen some shit, and she just doesn't want to like get comfortable with somebody else. And Blanca walks in with all this hope and she's like, Jesus Christ, get away from me. But then Hopper bounces, so he reluctantly leaves. They're at dinner. So afterwards she finds the sigil under her bed, which was from Rachel, Anya's old roommate, who got into some super Wiccan stuff. And they get into it more in the second episode, so we could get into it. But all the tea stuff goes with this, but we didn't kind of wait until we go there. But most importantly, Rachel said she could feel something like around her, the living shadow chasing her around. So that's definitely probably how she died, unless it's just how like a metaphor for death or something. This like living shadow is a metaphor for death. I don't know. We'll see, I guess.
Yeah.
And then we know our boy loves metaphors.
Yes. And Anya leaves and slaps the button that closes the door automatically. I just bring that up because they like almost highlighted it like two or three times. And I'm like, all right, is that going to come back or is that just being accurate because this is a hospice house and like there are a lot of sick people. So I don't know. I hope somebody goes to hit the button and it like doesn't work and they're like panicking. Anyway, in the very beginning of the ghost tour, Spence is kind of bringing it through a hallway, and this is where he points out all the pictures and they show the class of 1968. And I was mad that they pointed it out right away because I was like, Julia Jane, she signed it, she's on there. But they do go to later on day at the end of this episode.
All right, here we go.
Cafeteria, baby.
Oh yeah, go ahead. Take us into the cafeteria. I didn't take too many notes from the cafeteria.
This was only important to me because they tell you the 6-month checkup rule. So like for insurance purposes, so like people, you know, that was important. And then like right when the scene opens up, there's this crazy marking on the back of, is it Anesh or Amesh?
I think it's Amesh with an M.
Okay. So on the back of Amesh's neck, do you guys see that?
Yeah.
But that's going to be something that I'm
just wondering if it's one of his scars from surgery from being sick. Like, I don't know.
That's
it
totally
could be.
Too.
I didn't know if it was going to be something where like where Mark and Dr. Stan are in on it, where they do something to all the patients and maybe it's making them a little bit crazier. But it could have just been me seeing that because I was looking for it on other people and I don't think I found it. They didn't,
what does
like,
the
show
mesh
any...
say is wrong with him? I can't remember which one he is.
I didn't write it down, but Kevin, I know, is leukemia.
Anya's bone cancer.
Anya's bone cancer. Thyroid cancer is our main character.
Yeah, because I'm wondering what, because it could be an incision for some kind of surgery based on what he has, but I can't remember what, if he says what he actually has. And he probably did, because that's what they call each other when they first meet.
Yeah.
So, you know, what they have. But what about Spence not liking QB1?
I know.
Is that a thing, or is that just kind of like a joke, or like,
I mean, the way they explain it off was good enough for me. Like, because he's even cute and funny and not dying.
Is it because, okay, well, let's jump ahead for 2 seconds here. We have the scene with QB1 and Spence after Spence gets cut. And he says, like, it's not just a gay thing, talking about AIDS. And then he's talking about how you need to see Interview with a Vampire, which, guys, let me just say, that show has been revived. Well, it was a movie. The show now on AMC, and it's getting good reviews. It has one episode. Maybe we'll have to check it out. But I was getting vibes like, is QB1 saying that he's gay and does Spence not, is, you know, is there some kind of thing between them where
you're jumping, you know, the gun, dude? You're really jumping it. You know, I want to talk about that in depth.
Okay, cool. All right. So you're going to talk about it. All right.
I mean, cool. Yeah, we'll get there.
Well, the reason I was bringing it up is because with QB1 saying it's not just a gay thing, I don't know if that's saying Spence isn't gay and he doesn't like that people are assuming he is because he has AIDS, and that's why he doesn't like QB1, because QB1 actually is gay, and it's just like reminding him too much of what he's getting, like the ridicule he's getting, like what Anya is saying about him having it, or if they're both gay. We'll talk about it, but I'm just trying to figure out.
The devil's lettuce must have stopped me from even trying to figure out what was going on there. Because, wow, I did not read into all of that. But I mean, anyway, we'll talk about it later when it does get brought up. But I think that we can move on to basically the night. There's the one more vision before the night, right?
Yeah. Also, real quick, did anybody think it was weird how they say they make their meals for you? I mean, it's pretty accurate. Because it's
poisoning them.
Yeah, I was like, I don't know. It's weird not seeing the food prepared and then brought out. Whatever.
Yeah, I mean,
I've never gone to a restaurant.
You know, you're watching, you know, a scary show, and you're expecting something sketchy like that. Because, I mean, they say they talk to your doctor, and it's based on what the food you're allowed to eat or what you need, and you know, it's a specific meal based on what your doctor says. So that could easily just be nothing, or it could be like what you say, Paul. I mean.
You take a bite first, Mark. Let's see.
Yeah, Mark. Give me one. Take a bite, bro.
Fucking pussy. Anyway, next bucket is the Midnight Club, right? So this for me is where it really hooked me. I was like, okay, cool. I wanted everybody in a group talking like best friends and just like shooting the absolute shit. You could tell they like these people are together because they have to be, but that forms a bond that is like tight as fuck, and they all share something that nobody else can understand. I fucking love this. So they're having this little party, right? They get together and they meet, and they say they are telling stories to create new ghosts because that's all they are in the end. But then we find out that the main reason is that whoever is the first to croak out of the group has to try and communicate from the other side, which is so fucking cool.
Yeah.
Like, come on. This is like ghost story 101, right? Like, it's so sick. I love it. And then we have our two stories. So I feel like Natsuki's story, we could just kind of fucking rip through. This one in particular, even on my second watch, I was like, I don't know how much to read into this one. It's pretty, the jump scares with the headphones and
oh my God.
On the second watch, I was like at work at my lunch break watching, just being like, I couldn't get my phone fast enough to lower it. And it was just like, it's like freaking the fuck out.
Yeah.
Emily's doing homework in the other room, and I have a door open, and all you hear is like a million different screams from the same girl scaring the same dude. And I'm like, I am so sorry. I'm going to get up and close this door for you.
The only thing I could think of was that he's quickly satiring and making fun of shows or movies that specifically do the jump scares, and they're not actually scary. And that's exactly what they say when she starts telling the story. There's no other reason. I mean, it was ridiculous. The amount of back and forth, like under you, on top of you, to the side, you know, it seemed like it was purposely satire. I mean, it was a lot, and it was.
It was exactly like Scream. They were being so meta about like the horror, and that's what Spence was saying. And you can't tell me that he didn't throw this story in there to reuse the Haunting of Hill House ghost versions of people, because that's exactly what Natsuki in the story was. And I was Jesus, man, like, this is creeping me out just because of nostalgia,
right?
Of, all that.
Was it Amesh or Spence who was like making fun, or was like, "Stop, no, that's cheap."
I think it was Spence, right?
So fucking funny. But we have to say, I skipped this part, which was like one of my favorite parts, is before they tell the stories, they say to those before and those after, to us now and those beyond, seen or unseen, here but not here, which was giving me like such 100 vibes with like, in peace may you leave the shore, in love may you find the next, like traveler's prayer. I just like anything like that. And I'll learn this and know it off the top of my head soon. So
also want to say that story made me really, really like Natsuki.
Yeah.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
She's funny. She's like crawling on the table, trying to fuck with them, and then like slams the table to scare him. It was making me jump scare constantly. So
Sandra fell off her chair. You know, Sandra, from what was her name in Midnight Mass?
She was the one in the wheelchair.
She is not on this character sheet for some reason. So never mind. Anyway, whatever. Sandra's cool. She's very religious, but she also seems like a little baby because she gets scared the most and it falls off. But just to go back, something really small, and I don't know if they'll even touch on it, or I could be making this entire thing up in my head, but when you said they're doing the cheers before, they always do it, and then they always drink. A lot of them have these ceramic mugs that look like they made, and a bunch of them match, not all of them. But I was like, I wonder what that is. And then the more I thought about it, the more I was like, maybe that's one of their therapy sessions. They go and do pottery, and that's why they all have them. And I'm like, dude, Mike Flanagan's a genius. Like,
look at this, dude. Like, maybe you're the genius.
Yeah, maybe they're just random mugs.
Mike Flanagan's going to be like, dude, no, but that's amazing.
but yeah, I absolutely love this.
Yeah, that's cool.
It was reminding me of like, rat poison Haunting of Hill House cup of stars
cup
type
of stars
deal.
Baby,
because
pinky up
the flashes of the people around the table dead
it
gives you poison vibes and cult vibes, where it's like you do suicide by drinking poison, you know
the
what I mean,
punch man.
Baby,
and
anything.
That could be somehow connected to the healing water that I don't remember her name in this show,
Shasta.
Because that's obviously going to be a huge plot point, and it could be something to do with the water. I don't really know, but
So let's think about this real quick. Are we missing anybody at the table that we met?
Tristan, but we haven't met Tristan yet. They're obviously like on like bed rest.
Oh well, that Tristan's the one that she's telling the story to through the door, right?
Yeah, which is an episode.
Yeah, okay, but everybody else. The reason why I'm asking is I just think it's funny because the main character, when Alanka is going down and following Anya, you know, you find out that they're sitting around the table and then they're saying she was asleep, so we didn't invite her and this and that. And they're trying to decide, like, is she invited? Like, is she going to be cool enough to be invited? Everyone in the house seems to be invited. So
Amesh, who was the last one in, was like, what did they say? Like, even Amesh was invited or something.
They're saying that the night the Sheree, who doesn't give the stories, is still invited, even though she hasn't given a story yet. Remember? And she's like, oh, I'm still working on it. And they're like, you have stories for everything.
One of the other characters, one of the boys, Amesh, was like, you trusted me or something, or you were skeptical of me, and she's like, I still am.
I'm just saying, it just seemed to me like everyone's in it, so how is it so like unique to be a part of it? But
well, they just had to make sure they could trust her.
But anyway, it was really cool. I loved the scene where you're following her, you know, you walk out the door, you look around the corner, and you're watching Anya go down the elevator that they said. Well, did she go down or up? But I think she went down, right?
Yeah.
The elevator that, you know, they're saying don't use and don't go down into the morgue and this and that. So I'm like, are we getting into the morgue already? Like, that's what I'm starting to think about that. And, you know, it was the creepy vibes were at a 10 there. We got going back to our Hill House coverage, Paul. We got a creep count going for that one. I was like, all right, what's happening here?
Yeah, I definitely thought Anya was up to some shit. Like she was like the real Wiccan user or whatever, but no, she was just going there because she can't use the stairs.
I also thought the same thing too for a second, Paul. I thought she knew about that symbol under the bed.
Yeah.
Like she might have been the one to do it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Take it back. So,
Jimmy, when you were asking about, you know, have we met everyone? Is everyone at this table? I actually thought that was interesting because when Alanka is researching in the hospital, I actually paused and read the little description and it said like 14 bed, like hospice. So I was like 14 bed. Okay. Does that mean there's going to be 14 kids? Does that mean including, you know, Dr. What's her face?
Stan. Umbridge.
Stan. She looked like Umbridge for a second.
Well, if they say a 14 bed, that would make you think it would be 14 beds for hospice people.
Fully.
And we do know that there's seven at the table. It seems that they only, you know, the bed only became available because the last person passed away. So maybe there is seven others that aren't invited and we just don't meet them because it's not part of the story.
Yeah.
I would be shocked
about that.
I love how they just call it making ghosts, like telling stories. Like, yeah, we come here to make ghosts. I'm like, fuck, that's awesome.
Yeah. So our girl Alanka, like she says at the elevator earlier in the episode, it takes a lot to scare her. She steps right the fuck up. They say Annie up. She says, give me that bottle, takes a big old swig and just rips the story, which was a great story and relevant to everybody, too. And she tells the story about Julia Jane. And it's lit. I mean, this girl, I actually forget the year here. Oh, no, I don't. It's 1968.
There you go.
She falls in love, but then she gets sick. Same cancer as Alanka, which is how she found the article in the first place. She starts obsessing over the date because they give her a year. So she obsesses over the date of a year out. Once she hits that date, though, she passes it. She swears she can hear Nathan, who was the boy she fell in love with, calling out for her name in the middle of the night. So she's wandering around and then she just basically disappears. I think she gets to the elevator maybe and disappears. I couldn't really tell, but they say she's a sleepwalker, which I love. Like, sleepwalkers.
Heard that. Talk about creep cam with Kathleen sleepwalking.
So they're worried she walked off a cliff or something. And then 1 month later, this creepy bitch just shows right the fuck back up, cured, in remission. So crazy. So, So what do you guys think about this story? And do you think that this is going to come into play in a real way? Do you think that someone's going to get cured or something?
So let me jump in first. I was thinking the same thing and I was really confused because as she's telling the story, like, you know, she's only telling a story. It's based on truth, but she's also making it up. But as we're watching this girl go into the elevator, you can see like the claws of the shadow kind of follow her into the elevator too. And I'm like, well, fuck, like, is Alanka saying that? Like, is she just saying that to the people or is this actually what happened and we're seeing it, but Alanka doesn't. So there's a few things when they're telling the story that I'm like, should I take that to heart? Is that like a rule that they're setting or is it just like a part of the story? So I want to say yes, it's a real thing because even Julia Jane, well, see, I don't know if this is true or not, but she was obsessed with her own death date before she disappeared.
Right.
So like that was something that happened before, but I don't know if that's true or not.
Right.
So then she comes back and then can spit out everybody else's death date. That's cool. But I obviously got to assume that the healing herself part was definitely true and is going to be a thing.
Yeah. So what we know is true would be she was sick. She had thyroid cancer. She disappeared and it was a week, not a month. And she came back and she was in remission. Everything else was part of the scary story.
She said she never left the house, but again, we don't know if
that's totally freaking Nell Luke situation from Hill House. I was here the whole time.
Standing here, no one could see me.
Yeah, my God.
But
gosh.
You gotta assume that if she really did go into remission from this terminal illness, that they did interviews on her and like asked her things. So, like, I'm taking it at face value truth that she did say those things where she thinks she didn't leave. So there's gonna be something in there where whatever this curse is or whatever healed her, I guess, kind of just happens to you rather than you being like conscious, like kind of like sleepwalking.
Yeah.
So I don't know, but I definitely think those pieces could be true.
Let me throw a little tinfoil at you. So let's turn this on its head and say, like, let's say maybe what if the doctor's actually good? Okay. What if, let's say, we're getting into what's the girl's name that we meet in hiking again, Kathleen?
Shasta.
Shasta, right. Okay. So we meet Shasta and she's saying, drink the water and here's the chamomile.
Shasta. Shasta.
With a tea.
Shasta. Shasta.
Shasta like Rasta.
Yeah. So we meet Shasta and she. So we meet Shasta and she's. Is it Shasta? It's Shasta, right?
Shasta with S-H-A-S-T-A.
So we meet Shasta. And yeah, so we meet Shasta.
Shut the fuck up. Bev Keen. Just call her Bev Keen.
Yeah.
Okay.
Call her Steven's wife.
So we meet Steven's wife in the woods. And she's saying, you know, this water is magical and you're in some kind of healing place, whatever. We'll get to that part. But my thing is here. You know, the drink the water thing just reminded me of like drink the Kool-Aid or, you know, the poison kind of thing. And we know there's a cold situation and we know that the doctor got sketchy when the cold got brought up. What I'm wondering is what if Julia never actually happened? And it's like the cult just trying to have like some kind of story to make people think that they're back then could have been some kind of cure, like back when they were actually an active cult and the doctors trying to actually protect from that. And that girl, Shasta, Steven's wife, is actually the cult member still active. You know, I just don't, you know, I'm just wondering if there's going to be some kind of plot twist with that, just because
you absolutely lost me in the beginning, but then found me at the end. I was lost and then I was found. Something for sure up with Pasta.
For sure.
She is, has to be with the cult or something. Like she has something to do.
Right. I mean, this all good. The reason why I'm going tinfoil is because I'm saying, you know, you're asking me, do I think someone's going to be cured? My answer is no. I think that Julia might have not even been cured ever. Okay. But that kind of makes the story weird, because the coolest part of the mystery is that she shows up cured and she says, I was here the whole time. That's, you know, that's kind of the cool part. But, you know, the cult thing could be like, you know, trust us, we'll cure you. You know what I mean? Like that's their marketing for it. So I don't know.
And I'm going to throw something at the wall that I just thought of right now, just because it sounds like it would be fun if they could pull it off, is what if it's obvious that Shasta and Dr. Georgina Dr. Stan, what are we calling this girl? Are we calling
Stanton.
Her Dr. Georgina? Dr. Stan,
yeah.
Are on different sides. Like they hate each other. And it seems like the doctor always reports Shasta if she's on the thing. So what if Shasta, or what if one of them could be also Julia, like herself?
Well, Shasta has red hair and so does Julia. We're talking 25, 30 years later, she should be a lot older looking.
But what about the healing waters that come? Yeah, like if the healing waters come into place and she really is only healed because she's constantly drinking the water, she can't leave. That's why she's on the premise and can't, like, she needs to be here. Otherwise, the cancer could come back. So it could, either one of them could be Julia. And I'm feeling like that's probably where it's got
to
go.
Yeah, it's so funny. Like, I wonder when it comes to Flanagan, and this is so stupid because we're talking Haunting of Hill House with ghosts and Bly Manor with ghosts and Lady of the Lake and all this stuff. And I'm going, is the Fountain of Youth too supernatural? No, it's not. Like, it's not. So that could totally be a thing. Like, I mean, that might be like if she keeps trying to get into the water and she needs it and it is Julia.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
could be.
They do go into it. She does say like it comes from an aquifer that runs like 3 miles underground or something like that, and this is one of the only spots that pops up. So I mean, it checks out. Yeah, she's definitely a really cool character. What is Alfredo Pasta?
she is, and I was gonna say this, when she was like a breath of fresh air when I saw her, and by the end of the scene I was like, she is gonna have something so important, this girl. But we'll get there. So let's wrap up this episode while we can. Alanka finishes the story in a great way. Like, if she did make it up, good for her. Our girl's got fucking stories. The way she says that now, she knows everyone else's death day, which is fucking great. That's so such a cool ending. Then they kind of disperse. Alanka and Kevin are walking down the hall. And Kevin is the type of guy who also notices and the pictures on the wall and the names on the wall. He's not just blowing by them every day. And he knows that there has to be some truth in the Julia Jane story. Jimmy already ripped through what that truth is. And they kind of have this conversation where Alonka is like, I'm going to be healed. And Kevin's like, oh shit. Like it's and she is scariest about it the next day, which
this
we'll talk about in the next episode. But I mean, I'm team Alonka, man. If she's gonna fight the fight, let's go fight the good fight, mm-hmm. girl. But then she walks away and we see the shadowy figure following her. So she's already getting got in episode one. I was surprised there wasn't more of like, I really liked the Julia Jane story. So I'm not saying that didn't do it for me, but I thought there was going to be some like boom ending where you're like, as a pilot, there wasn't, right. But that's okay. It's fine.
I mean, yeah, the only thing was Julia Jane. He points out to the picture that we were looking at before, but we're also observant that we all saw it. We all knew it was there.
Yeah.
One amazing interaction right at the end of Alana's story when she's like, all right, I'll be in. Like, I'll tell you the end of the story if I'm in the club. And she was like, I will do it. I will stand against the veil and push and scream until you hear me. And I'll scream the truth. I promise. I'm like, damn, Alanka, you're awesome. And then Anya hits her with the, you don't have to be such a drama queen about it. Yeah. After like Anya's so dramatic about every other thing she says.
It's so funny. I loved that.
Yeah.
All right. Episode two. And then we could do final thoughts at the end.
Yep.
Yeah.
All right, cool. Episode two is called The Two Danas, based off of the story Anya tells at the end. Bucket number one is going to be all the Anya stuff. So it's called Anya Being a Bitch to Alanka is what this bucket is called. Yeah. And we're going to rip it all the way until Stanton talks to Anya. So anything with Anya in it, we're going to go. So the number one scene right up the top, Anya is waking up from a big nightmare, right? Do you remember what the nightmare is? I actually don't have it. I think it's just in the midnight like the visions.
Yeah, it's just like the visions.
It's the same visions, yeah.
Mm-hmm. So Alanka's drinking this fucking tea and Anya is dunking on her for it. And it's so annoying. And Anya's being such a bitch. And I believe I understand Anya in this. So it's fine. I understand why Anya's being such a bitch. But it's really a lot. She's awful. But then they find Alanka finds this necklace and then Anya claims it, which we all knew that was not hers when she was
right. Right.
So we think it's Rachel's. It could have been someone before Rachel, too. I'm not sure.
No, they confirm it. They confirm it later because she says, I want Rachel's parents to have this or something like that.
Okay. Yeah. Yep.
Yeah. So then the next scene we'll cover is the group therapy scene, which is where it all comes to a head. I really loved Amesh being so sad about the PlayStation. I know we touched on it, but that does suck. Like, he feels stupid for saying it, but he's genuinely like, would have really looked forward to playing that PlayStation in the end.
This is the concrete confirmation of the time period of the story right here.
Yeah, they didn't give us a date until episode two.
Yep, you should tell Mike that was the date.
Yeah, I'll be like, Mike, I'm pretty sure it's right around 1994 based on your context clues.
Yeah, and this is the grieving sesh where Sherry tells her about grieving her pets and Anya tries calling her out, saying, oh, you're a liar and all this other stuff. And then Anya's being a bitch, brings up the tea to the whole group therapy. And it was like, tell everybody about your fucking tea. They're just going to heal you and everything. Then Anya goes into that really, really cool monologue about everything wrong, all the therapies, all the different treatments that you can try, and nothing's going to work. Like, we're here to die. Like, why are you wasting your time doing this? I'd rather my room not smell, and I'd rather the people next to me not drink their own piss. I'd rather we just all just die instead of trying this round stuff.
Great acting.
Yeah.
It was really good.
So then, just to get through them. So, Alanka afterwards then confronts Anya because she has to, and I'm team Alanka too. I mean, our girl can hold her ground. She's a good main character. All the other ones are like funner than her, so I think we like gravitate towards them, and none of us said Alanka was our favorite character, but she's a good character and she stands up for herself and she's like, sorry, I just wanted to be friends. Like, I wanted to be friends with you and get to know you because we're sharing a damn room together.
Yeah.
So I'm glad she got her piece in too.
And I'm sorry, I was going to say, she also passed the test during the therapy scene where she didn't let it bother her in front of everyone. And she kind of snapped back at her quick and everyone gave her that look like, all right, bitch can go, dude. Bitch got it.
Yeah. You know, Anya wants to drink her own piss. Everybody chuckled at that.
It'll help.
Like, all of these scenes are just like there to characterize Anya, and they really culminate in the scene later with Kevin where he kind of psychoanalyzes how Anya is about the group. So this did feel like Anya's episode. I feel like I know her front to back. It obviously is because it's her midnight club session too. So it was good to really get you in her mind. And now looking back, it's like, yeah, she was definitely a bitch to Alanka, but it makes sense. Like, that's just her. Now we kind of get it.
Yeah. And the last Anya scene before, obviously, the huge Anya scene of her telling the story is just Stanton talking to her and kind of explaining, like, man, nothing grinds my gears more than someone who reminds me of me. And Anya thinks she's talking about Alanka, but she's actually talking about Anya. So anyway, this scene is important mostly because she sees the shadow and she's like looking at the mirror when it happens, which is interesting because of the story she tells about the mirror. So I'm wondering if her story was inspired by that or
I was rewinding it a million times because I wanted to know if that mirror was moving without Anya moving, but it just wouldn't work that way because it's not showing both at the same time and it's her head's moving later in the scene. So it's probably just she's just looking at herself, but I just kept staring at it being like, is that thing moving? When just like in the story, you know? But I just want to say, like, going back to what you, Luke and Paul were saying with the, with Anya going to in the elevator and disappearing. And we were wondering if she's going to be part of like the cold or know what the symbol is. When she first has this conversation with the doctor, and we don't know exactly what she's going to be talking about. And she's kind of just being like, here's the locket. I'm thinking she's on the doctor's side for a second to start that scene. And then they start talking and it ends up not being that. But, you know, I'm not loyal to any of these people, man.
I'm just worried because it's such high turnover of the hospice lifetime and Anya being the oldest. I don't think any of the Midnight Club can really be in on this, right? Like, I feel like it has to be either Shasta or the doc.
Right.
Can I put some tinfoil on for a second?
What about QB1, dude?
Totally.
He could also be evil. Yeah.
I always get like Munchausen's by proxy. I always get like Munchausen's, like, where it's like Anya is Stanton's daughter and she's actually been there for so long, but everyone just dies out. So no one realizes she's always the longest one there. She's always the longest one there until like the last like one dies, though. And then she can kind of come up with a new, you know what I mean? Right, like she may have been there for years and years. Yeah, that's where my tinfoil comes in. I was thinking of who could be the mole type deal.
That's actually really cool. Like, I do like that a lot. I mean, I think that I'm wondering if that conversation rules that out now because they're having that, they're having this conversation with nobody except us watching. So it's not like you're putting on a roost for anybody. Like, they, you know, unless the doctor isn't part of it. And it's like, you know,
Shasta
and Anya, you know, Shasta's the one, but then I don't know. Then the doctor should know that there's nobody dying, that Anya's not dying. But Kathleen, I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Coming from the master of the stupid theories, but yours isn't stupid, Kathleen.
So then just before, like, we'll get back to Anya later, we'll cover the in-between scenes, but Anya ends up puking. Do you think that's because she just has cancer? Or do you think because she's like saw the shadow and is scared and was like, fuck, puke?
I would have puked. I really like, it's cool how, you know, right after the scene is she looks into the bathroom and it's dark and then she sees the eyes and then that's totally Midnight Mass with the, are we allowed to give a spoiler here with the monster?
With the interview of the vampire.
Yeah, with the monster. And, you know, those glowing eyes will get me every time. I think they're cool as shit, you know, having them in the background. It's very sad, and everybody always wants it ever since Hill House. Everybody wants the background ghosts. You know, when Bly came out and it wasn't there, people were, like, outraging, and he was like, that was just for Hill House, man. I'm looking for things.
Me
so just the fact though that they are doing those types of quote unquote scares where she's looking in the bathroom dark and boom, there's those glowing eyes. And then when she snaps out of it, the bathroom was actually fully lit up, you know, like she's looking at, we see the entire inside of the bathroom. I don't know. It seems weird that they're showing us her being sick, but it could just be like, hey, this is part of their life. They're dying. Or it could be like, you know, it shook her.
Yeah,
I think it's more like you don't forget that they're all terminally ill and in a hospice, but it's good to just constantly have reminders of they talk about meds, they show the sicknesses. Yes. And it's kind of funny, but did anybody else besides, I mean, obviously you got the Midnight Mass, the glowing eyes thing too, but did you also feel a little bit Bly Manor specs? Because that's what I saw.
Oh, okay. You know, like, like the shining eyes off the
shining eyes,
the glare of the headlights off the sun or the eyeglasses. Yeah, I like that.
love that. I can't wait to rewatch Fly Manor with Alex. I haven't seen it in 2 years. I haven't seen it since we podded it. So I'm
doing a Hill
so
House.
Pumped.
Hill House is happening this October. Same. I haven't watched that since we podded, so that's a good 2 years.
Mm-hmm. All right, cool. Bucket number two is random happenings at Brightcliff. So number one is Alanka goes through the pre-need. And this is basically just a big old file of papers that she has to fill out to talk about shit when she dies. What casket do you want? What music do you want at your funeral? This, that. It's so depressing. But this is when our girl is just absolutely, she wastes no time. She's just like, what about Julia Jane? And this is when Stanton is just like, Stanton literally like the way that, like they should, I feel like they shouldn't have showed her face.
Yeah, she was very like,
because she was like,
yeah. Yeah. And for anyone not watching the video, Kathleen is is doing a nice impression exorcism of what the doctor was doing. Yes. But yeah, I mean, it was so blatant, unbelievably blatant. And well, then
she calls it a misdiagnosis too. She's like, oh yeah, they're rare, but you know, that's what Julia was, a misdiagnosis.
And
not
and it's
she was scared.
Yeah, it's even more blatant the fact that she's like, never heard of her. And then she like tells like, oh, you never heard of the only so far like cured person from your hospice place.
And she was like, oh, that, yeah, maybe.
And that's like the other thing that like going back to the first episode, and you guys can correct me if I'm wrong, but I'm pretty sure it's only been a hospice place since doctor bought it. So that means it was her patient that was cured. And you're telling me you don't remember her. I mean, I get it. You're trying to pull off it's 25 years ago, but yeah, you're going to remember your only person that was freaking cured that disappeared for a week and showed up saying I'm cured.
You want to know the worst lie of all time and how to make me for sure know you're lying is to say, oh, wow. Oh, yeah, I do remember. And I've never thought about it since.
Yeah, right.
Like, that was so crazy. And like, why would you say that?
And she has the worst poker face, too, with like, you know, not only did she get shook with Julia, then she brings up Paragon and she's like, damn, girl, you got me, man. Yeah. She's
like, nope, never heard of it.
It's like the the double whammy. And she gets shook from both of them.
Literally so bad because she's like, oh, no, I've never heard of that. But yeah, if you're not going to have anything else, you can go.
Yeah,
she's like trying to change subjects like real quickly.
I'm a little concerned at the fact that she did not get slightly paranoid. Like she still fully trusts all the hospice kids, leaves the door unlocked. The door, that felt a little weird to me.
No, on purpose.
Yeah, I was going to say, Kathleen.
On purpose. You do not let them say that, like, that sketched you the fuck out. You did not leave that file unattended. No way.
Yeah.
Baby, no way. She fudged the numbers.
Okay.
Okay. Sure. So you're saying she wanted her to find the folder and look into it.
Whatever's in that file. Yeah. Maybe she took it. I mean, she could have just wrote like everythingwascool.com. It's
if she's part of the cult, it could be like, you know, writing in the file, like maybe she did this or maybe she did that. And it's like whatever she wants them to do, you know, whatever the plan is. Walking her right into the plan, you know, so maybe she is actually not the worst poker face and she's just playing into some kind of, you know,
like, let me drop my keys loudly into this drawer and shut the drawer loudly.
So you
know exactly where they are.
Yeah, exactly.
The drawer wasn't locked either, too, to the keys. And you'd think, I don't know, maybe that's too much.
Yeah.
She's a key for her keys.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay, so this is where Natsuki is reading Tristan a story. It almost made me feel like, what is that disease, that 5 feet apart disease? That movie 5 feet apart with Cole Sprouse, what's the disease where you can't be like 6 feet apart from somebody else? It made me feel like that because
COVID.
Right.
She also could just be so sick that they can't have germs going.
Well, it's the
immunocompromised.
That's what I was
the mask and yeah.
But
so less
Mark.
Contagious, more about safety for her or Kristen.
Exactly.
Because she didn't have a mask on or anything, but he was putting it on to go in. So maybe he didn't want to bring in other bacteria. Yeah, I think it's more she can't be exposed to anything.
Right. Yeah. And let's talk really quick about they're just all pounding morphine, man. They're
just chowing down
on morphine. So they're all loopy, man. They could be all literally this whole thing could just be like they're all just drugged up and there's nothing going on in the hospice. Like they're so drugged up on morphine that they're seeing the shadows and they're like, what's going on, man? Like, let's go to Mars, dude.
So next we have the hike, which is one of my favorite parts of the two episodes. It was one visually gorgeous, beautiful, and was so different than the rest of the show. It's all dark and in this like old ass house. And this was like beautiful. I think they literally did that on purpose to make it seem like, wow, this spring, this wellspring is like otherworldly. Like it's gorgeous. So this is where we meet the goat, Samantha Sluyan, aka Bev Keen, aka Lee Crane, Steven's wife, Shasta.
Shasta.
But yeah, so what, she's super hippy dippy. I mean, I loved the scene. She felt like culty to me.
Yeah.
What did you guys think of her just in general?
It was really creepy the way she like jumps on the name. Oh, it's a beautiful name. And then she goes into like all the explanations, links it like through three different things. And then she's like, oh, sorry, I'm all about that in ancient Greece. So I'm like, all right. Well, why are you saying this? Unless it's got to do something with later, like what, whether that's like her background, where she's from, or she's gonna know. I don't know. She's fucking crazy. In general.
Yeah, I mean, there's no way. There was no doubt in my mind from the moment you see her that she's not bad. Whether it's the right answer or not, I'm just like, she's bad. I mean,
Yeah, she's there for the water too. So I mean, the water obviously is important because she's like, oh yeah, I just used to make tea and stuff like that. It's a beautiful aquifer. But and she also brings up the healing vortex.
Yeah. Right.
And that's like, you know, is she crazy or is she telling the truth?
Freaking weirdo.
You're sitting in one right now. You know, so if she sits in that spot, well,
I would be like a lock. If I was a lock, I'd be like, I'm staying here forever then. I'm healing, bro.
Right? She didn't ask any questions.
Yeah, she was just like, oh, cool. I'm healing. I'm sitting right here. I'll talk to you later. Go get some chamomile.
Shasta was just spraying poison on the chamomile, just spraying poison on. And that's why everyone dies around the table with their own mug that they made.
Yeah. The only thing that, you know, was of substance in a way where it wasn't like, could it be hippy dippy? Is it weird? We don't know. But she says, I haven't met a patient in a long time and I haven't met somebody as smart as you or a smart patient in even longer. So, I mean, Samantha Sloyan, I don't know how old she is, but she's not old, obviously. She looks young. So, you know, the fountain of youth thing is a great theory here. Is she Julia? Is she, you know, a relation? Is she the next whatever, a daughter, a granddaughter of someone that was in the cult back in the day? You know, it's got to be something like that. But she's obviously been around for a long time. That's what she's getting at.
Yes. I was saying, thinking the same thing. She's saying like, if you're here getting this water, you must be smart.
And I also get Samantha Sloyan. She's a natural redhead, right, Kathleen? Mm-hmm.
She's been redhead and everything.
Yeah. So that's what I'm saying. So whether she's natural or not, I've always seen her as a redhead. Mm-hmm. You got Julia as a redhead, you know, putting redheads in shows isn't very like common in the way where you're like, here's a mystery with a redhead. And now we have another sketchy person show up who's also a redhead. Could be a blatant red herring, but I'm just saying, like, are they making us want to think it's Julia or, you know, whatever? But I'm just saying there's that to think about. Like, we have two redheads here that I think that want us to think it's Julia.
Yeah. Alanka was telling everybody about it later. They're like, that can't be a real name. And like, that had to be like a made up one. Yeah. So it could be, you know, her name was Julia or whatever. And then she changed it.
So that means nobody has talked to her really besides Alanka.
Right. Everyone there says they never met her.
Did she, am I making this up? Why do I have a note here did she self-proclaim herself as a teacher or the teacher?
I don't know.
Why did I write that down?
Ring a bell.
I
feel
like maybe not. I thought she said like one of the things that, like what she is, like when she's like, what are you? Like, why are you here? She's like, I'm a teacher or something like that.
That doesn't ring a bell.
Okay. I could be making that up, but yeah, I think we nailed all of the Shasta talk earlier. She's just like, in this specific scene though, she's just like a legendary like NPC character. She just walks up, tells you crazy shit about the healing vortex, gives you the mission and walks the hell out. But she stole like this episode for me. She was just I was hyped because it was Bev Keen again, seeing her in a completely different character. Yeah. But yeah, whatever she shows up next is going to be very telling about all of these theories. Yeah. So I'm hoping
gives you the mission.
Yeah, well, dude, by the way, go check out that chamomile field before you go to back to your house. Okay.
So she does, and oh my god, there's a weird marking in a tree. Okay, I wonder if we're ever gonna see that again. Or that come
exactly
up.
Weird marking. Yeah. I took it as an hourglass. Do you guys take that too?
I took it as an hourglass with the top carved out.
Right.
So
right.
Meaning like your time is up, like you're going to die.
Okay. Bucket number three: arts and crafts. So. They're folding 1,000 paper cranes. It's Amesh wants a before I die list. And it seems like Natsuki told him this morning about this 1,000 crane thing. Yeah. And so he's like, well, we're doing it. And everyone's like, fuck you, dude. What
else? Like, I knew I messed up. Yeah. The second I said I fucked up.
So,
dude, their faces when he said that she told him that this morning, they're like, Jesus Christ, man.
I knew it when I said it. Yep. It's an ancient Japanese legend that promises 1,000 or promises. Anyway,
promises a wish to anybody.
Wish that, by a god, yeah.
Which is it's a flawed thing there because they're doing it together.
Yeah. I was like,
who gets the wish? Like,
it's not like you sacrifice 1,000, you have to make 1,000.
Right. You make 1,000 and they're between 7 of them making 1,000. Who gets the wish? It's bullshit, man.
You fight
it's
to the
sketchy.
Death.
Also, I just love Kevin here. Kevin's always like up positive and upbringing, and Amesh is going through the things he wants to do, and they're saying you'll never do any of them. And Kev's like, you know what? I think you're going to hang glide while losing your virginity into your sister's wedding. You're gonna do all the things on your list.
Yeah, that was great.
So this is where we get to talk about what Jimmy wanted to talk about. So Spence is just like talking and not paying attention. The paper cutter just cuts him. Right. I knew right away why they were freaking out.
I actually didn't, because, to be honest.
I had no idea.
Yeah.
Especially when the blood was on Anya. I knew exactly. Are they saying that he's on hospice from AIDS?
Yes.
It's the early 90s. Like, yeah. And they almost knew nothing about it then. I mean, the timeline is perfect for how bad this is. Like, Anya even touches on it when they say he has AIDS. Alanka, like, you know, she gets a sad face, and Anya's like, don't do that. Like, everybody's making that face. When you hear somebody has AIDS, you think, okay, they're going to die in like 2 seconds.
Well, that's a great line by Anya calling Alanka out, because she's like, we're all equal here. We're all dying. You're not going to give that face to him and not anybody else.
So the key here is that she's saying, no one in the world is blaming you for having leukemia and for AIDS. They're saying you did this to yourself. And it's such a good scene, like fucking snaps for Mike Flanagan.
Oh, yeah.
Such a fucking good scene.
I agree.
I was not expecting somebody to have AIDS in the show.
Right.
I wonder if that's in the books. We'd have to look it up.
Yeah, I'm not sure.
But basically they're saying, she says something like, you're being spited from God, quote unquote, because of it. I don't think Alanka's face was bad, but I liked Anya sticking up for him, even though she didn't need to. Alanka's not going to judge. She really wasn't.
Like,
she just felt,
I think it was of more all, of like, a, it was, you're right, right. I think it was more of like Alanka was giving the shocked face, which the shocked face leads to that stigma. And it wasn't that necessarily Alanka was going to think or even say the stigma and do what Anya said, but she was like, don't even start it. Yeah. Don't do it. You know?
Knew he's here to die. We're all here to die. Why do you suddenly get sad once you find out what it is?
Right.
Yeah. So Mark's character is giving me like Raul Coley vibes from Bly, like just so pure good, so sweet as the cook, like just the best character. I can't wait to watch that again. Anyway, Mark sewing up his finger. We've already gone through all of this. It's so fucking cute. Jimmy, to be honest, I wasn't getting I want to call him Riley, that Mark is gay vibe too. I really genuinely just thought he was being like really sweet and just, he's that good of a guy that he's trying to make Spence feel better. And in a real way, like he's spitting facts.
But wasn't he saying like, you got to, you know, not only do we have Brad Pitt and Tom Cruise, but we have Antonio Banderas, and you got to see him in this. Like, I mean, I thought it was like, yo, they're hot. Yeah. You know, like,
I thought he was just connecting with them because in the 90s, it's still like, OK, AIDS has an insanely like terrible stigma to it back then, but so did being gay. Like everyone.
Well, yeah. Yeah. I mean, well, they were, you know,
with it, take AIDS out of it. And people were probably will give you a dirty look just because you're gay, not because you have AIDS. Right. So I think I thought he was just being kind, but honestly, if he ends up being gay, then that is
so
fine
you're,
by me.
You're going with that. You definitely think that Spence is gay and got it from that.
I thought so.
Because Mark even says, Mark even was like, yo, I know two people that stuck each other with needles. They shared a needle and it's not just a gay thing. So I don't know if that was more like, you know, don't worry about the stigma. And, you know, he's just being accepting that, yeah, you're gay, but, you know, don't worry about that. But or is it like, yeah, man, you could have got it from anything else. Don't, you know.
So because of the Antonio Banderas, Brad Pitt talk, I took it that he was saying that to him because he is gay.
Meaning Spence.
But I just didn't think that Mark was gay.
Okay.
But he could be. And I would fucking love that. Be ashamed for every woman in the world if that's the case. But
QB1, baby, let go.
So handsome. But yeah. I mean, I loved these scenes. He's so sweet. And I'm glad they like tackled this in these like few minutes. It's good stuff.
For Zach Guilford, I guess I want QB1 to turn bad because I want him to get like those kind of acting scenes where he turns and we're like, damn, baby, like QB1's actually doing like, you know, Midnight Mass, obviously Friday Night Lights. He's the good guy, even though, you know, with Midnight Mass, you start off not really knowing if he's good or bad because of how the circumstances at the beginning of the season. But I would like to see Zach Guilford play a bad guy. But at the same time, QB1, man. You know, right now he's pure good.
What would the angle be and why would it be beneficial for QB1 to be empathetic towards the people that he was gearing up to be killed for the cult or killed for the Shadow Monsters?
Well,
I can't think of a reason why it would be positive.
Yeah, I wouldn't say that he's purposely being empathetic. I would say it's an act. Like he's
just buttering
them
up. What I'm saying. Why would that help?
False sense of security. You know, I don't know fully, but I would say that, like, you know, you have good cop, bad cop or something where like Zach Guilford is the one or QB1's the one that they like trust. And maybe later in the story when, you know, take this medicine or do this or do that, or I have no idea, but it's like, you know, they trust them. But either way, there's something there to the whole Spence doesn't like him thing. And that's what I was trying to get at. And I was tinfoiling it, you know, whether it's Spence, you know, whatever. We talked about it earlier, so I don't need to get into it again. But I have it's just weird to me that they all like he's such a pure hearted so far good guy. And Spence seems to be a really good guy. So why does Spence just hate him unless it's really just that stupid excuse that they say in the cafeteria?
I'm putting it on the board. I think he's pure good. I don't think he's going to turn bad.
Pure good. That's going to lead to a tragic death to make the audience feel something.
Yeah, I like that.
My goodness. Not on a boat, right?
My goodness. Spoiler. Right,
so I got a question for you guys because the next scene we get is like, all right, the alarm's going off for Natsuki to 11:55 from Midnight Club. Is Midnight Club every night at midnight or is it just so.
Pretty
like,
sure. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Jesus Christ.
I mean, they're saying some of these people are going to live for like two, three months.
Yeah.
Like you got to think this is the highlight. Yeah.
Right. That's exactly. True. Like it could, I mean, and they even say some of the stories took 3 days or, you know, so they haven't a lot of time, I guess, so they don't get caught. And obviously so that I guess they can get some sleep, but you know, it seems to be every single night.
Mm-hmm.
Gotcha.
All right. Bucket. Last bucket. Midnight Club.
Number two.
This is Anya's. Midnight Club number two. Anya tells a story about the two Danas. It's basically a classic double story, right? So Dana is this perfect girl and she's the ballet and she's the perfect student and she's this and that. But all she wants to do is fucking party. So she stays up at night and basically makes a deal with the devil to split into two. And you know this was going to go bad. This is just the worst fucking thing in the world. Very cool. I really like this. And I like where the show's going, where we're going to get a cool story like this every time. I hope they start getting more relevant. But I mean, we can go over it. I've already said the virginity part was my favorite. I mean,
dude,
come on.
Yeah, right.
So funny. Okay. Even when they first split, she's like on her bed doing homework and dancing.
Yeah, she's
partying.
That was my favorite.
And she's
actually
sitting there just like trying to take notes.
She's like dancing
up and
while taking notes and the who is it? What is it? The mom or the dad walks in and she's just like,
hey, I'm good.
Love you too.
Are we opening up conversation for the full story?
Yeah,
front just, to back?
Yeah, yeah. We don't
everyone
need
who's listening watched it. We don't have to touch on every second.
Paul, did you have something you wanted to go into?
I just loved the foreshadowing from Flanagan when she, Dana Two's on all types of drugs. She's like seeing shit and she sees Bill's face melt. So she throws the ballerina statue and the leg comes off. I'm like, damn, nice foreshadowing.
Mm-hmm. I didn't even catch that. I'm an idiot.
Yeah. I mean, it's like you said, Kathleen, it's a typical devil story. Get that shit and read the fine print, man. Get that shit in writing before you shake your hand. I mean, it's the dumbest thing ever just because it's so obvious that there's going to be issues with that.
Yeah.
My question to you guys is the first story. I'm blanking on her name, Kathleen. What was the name for the, what is it?
Natsuki.
Yeah. So is she the jump scare girl?
Yeah.
Okay. So they're going to be part of each of their stories, but it's weird that she wasn't the main character of her story.
Well, her character was about a boy.
Right. But I'm just saying, like, I'm saying like each story seems like it's giving you some like hints to the background or of the character. And obviously Anya was the main character and there's some truth to her story. So I was a little confused there, but yeah, I mean, I already brought this up. The devil shows up, the devil pops up at the same way the shadows move in the actual hospice. So I don't know if she's just adding that to the story because she just saw that happen while she was freaking out, or if it's supposed to be another kind of thing where I don't know, but you know, there are similarities there.
They do say the devil only visits her in her dreams too, which is like everyone's dreaming it. Well, not everyone's dreaming about it, but a couple people are dreaming about it.
That the devil was Dr. Stanton, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
This story was just so fun. And Kathleen, you said it best. Like, it's going to be so entertaining for us as audience members to see these stories. It lets Flanagan just flex any sort of muscle he wants. He can go horror, he can go creepy, he can go jump scare, whatever he wants to do. So it's pretty genius on like a just TV show level. And he can do whatever he wants. He has like an infinite creativity. But I can't really reason out how this is going to connect to her real life, because this seems like we're just adding a whole nother new variable that doesn't fit in with the rest of it, because it's coming from Anya, like in her made up story. I don't know how this can fit in with like the cult and like how I really can't like think of like how this will connect out.
The way I was getting it was because at the end, even Sandra says, like, you know, thank you for opening up to us, Anya, like sharing a little bit about yourself. So I think it was based on truth. I mean, she even says they started out in Ireland. This Dana started out in Ireland and then moved to the U.S. So I don't think everything in it, I think the devil's probably made up, but there's some truth.
Like metaphorical.
Yes, yeah. But there's some truth in it, in the fact that, like, you know, she was a perfect girl. And
right. Exactly.
Something happens where
she,
you know,
probably has a friend that, you know, some kind of best friend, you know, like the guy that's in the story, similar things like that. Luke, to your point, I don't understand really either, unless we're just doing a story or a show where we're having, as part of each episode, they're telling their stories. It's the Midnight Club. Like, you know, we're seven kids in hospice telling the story. And then it's just literally going to be an underlying part of it. There's a cult and like there's something going on in the actual hospice. Mm-hmm. I don't know how they're going to connect, besides the fact that it's going to give us background on each character. It's going to like let us get to know them a little bit better while they die.
Yeah.
Not only the character, the actor, actress, actor, whatever you want to say, that plays Anya, you know, she's so limited and she's already amazing. You're already saying like she's the most entertaining, but she's so limited that she's in a chair the whole time. This really gave her the chance to see how much she can act. And I thought she was amazing, man. But between the two different Anas, the losing her virginity in the same room as her parents, I mean, it's hysterical the way she acted that out. And I absolutely adored the way that she basically put everything into these two Danas. This is where you can really see her acting. It was great.
It's an actor's dream for sure.
Yeah. Like,
being able to do those kind of things. And then, one last thing I'll bring up about the story itself was it is just like a great way to cap it off in terms of horror, is saying how the one that wakes up feels the other one in hell. And then the one in hell gets to feel the glimpses of like the one that's living. And it's like, who has it worse? It doesn't really matter. But that part right there is like a good sign off of like a horror short story.
Hell yeah. You don't even know who's who.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. And literally, like, I don't know who's who survived.
Mm-hmm.
Check the track marks. You can figure it out. Come on.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. I love that. I love in when they were like facing off at the end to shoot each other. And she's like, you came to kill me. And she's like, if I came to kill you, it was only because you gave me the idea. And it felt like parody-ish. Shit. It was really funny. Yeah.
Doesn't make sense.
And it's also like that. It was the beeper thing is so stupid later in the story when you know she's ignoring you anyway. You could just literally talk to her. You scream at her in your head. Like, why beep her if she's ignoring you anyway? But whatever.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, stabbing herself. Incredible. Jeez. Such a really cool way to just, you know, send the 911 beeper in a different way, because obviously she was getting blocked out. I mean, it was
felt like
really,
Looper. If you've ever seen that.
Yeah,
just a really, really good story in general. And then when she sells it, I already said Sandra's like, thank you. And she's like, want to hear something else? Fuck off.
Yeah.
And he'll say, just want to jump back to the very beginning when she starts telling the story. They do the cheers again. They say the line and they all drink the tea.
The chamomile.
Now. It's all the tea. Anya doesn't say it. She doesn't say the line, and she spits the tea back out.
She spits it out, yeah.
So I'm like, is that an actual ritual that they have to do?
I didn't realize she didn't say it, but I obviously saw that she spit it out, so that's interesting.
They showed her face for the last time.
Either of that.
And she's not doing
it. Oh, well, it's blatant she spits it out, but it's probably, and it's probably blatant she doesn't say it, but I didn't catch it.
I mean, I definitely feel like it has to do something with the cult there, because Kevin was like, you know, they called it the Midnight Club before I even got here, and we had to do this every time. So, and they always have a drink, like Anya went down with the mug in her wheelchair because they always drink.
Right. Whether it's water or tea or wine, they said they always have to drink something and cheers.
So, that process definitely seems like it's part of the ritual.
Ritualistic, yeah. Yes. I mean, 100%.
Whatever's going on.
So she could be the inside man. That supports Kathleen's potential theory there. Because I wrote that down too, Paul. I was just fixated on the idea that she didn't do it, but I couldn't remember if she said the words in the first one, the first club meeting.
Yeah, I would have to go back.
Okay.
All right, cool. So this is really our last scene. Alanka sneaks out and Kevin follows her. They're going to kiss.
Can't wait. 100%.
Sign, seal, deliver. They're going to kiss. But it's so funny. He catches her just trying to sneak in. It's like, did she not even try to turn the door?
What's
going on here? Like, how is she even trying to see if it worked? Turn the door now, girl. Yeah. But anyway, again, Luke, I was going to make a big stink out of saying Stanton left it unlocked on purpose. This is like a very intentional thing, because you don't just like act sketchy as fuck and then leave your door unlocked. Right. But then so she grabs JJ's folder and then she gets transported back in time into this old thing. And Paul, this reminded me of Vampire Academy so much. Don't touch the painting. Don't touch the fucking painting.
Yeah.
I don't know. Me and Luke don't know what you're talking about.
Twice in 1 week. Don't touch a fucking painting. But there's bugs, which I know Luke hated, coming out of this painting.
Spiders, man.
And the scary old lady starving. What's up with everybody's eyeballs?
Starving.
It seemed like that seemed to be the old lady that we constantly got in the flashbacks. Yeah. That one in particular. So it seems like she will obviously be super important to whatever. It's not just a bunch of ghosts. This bitch particular is starving.
This bitch is hungry.
Nobody get any sketchy flags from Kevin being there like that?
Like, or was it like just upper like ass?
Did we buy the whole I didn't want to be creepy after it was too much time has passed?
I think I took it as literally like, yo, I just followed you because I got a crush on you and I'm just trying to like suave tell this story to get me out of it. And obviously it's creepy, so I'm just trying to make you laugh a little bit so you don't think I'm creepy. Like, I think it's more like the nerd got caught kind of thing, you know? Like,
gotcha.
I'm with you though, Luke. I think there's something a little off about Kevin.
Yeah, Luke, somebody's a sketchbag. Is it QB1? Is it KevBot? It's somebody, all right?
But, like, Kevin has a line where I think it's like Alanka gets the file out and is like, Julia Jane, and he like kind of smirks and then he kind of like looks at it really seriously or something like that. Or that was earlier on when she goes and apologizes to him. She was like, I'm a little embarrassed about last night. I don't want you to think I'm crazy and I have this idea that I'm gonna walk out of here healed, like I want to fight. So
yeah,
one of those two comments Kevin almost looks at her while she's not paying attention, questionably, like his eyes are furrowed. So there's something there.
Yeah. Now we get the I'm starving lady all up in Alanka's shit on top of her, screaming. Now I thought that what was going to happen was she passed out just like she did in the other part in the, earlier in the episode one, because it seemed like she pit like episode one at the party, she coughs it up. But then when she passes out, what is it? She passes out before she
sees the old lady in the hallway. And yeah, she's in the hospice. She's the old lady, passes out, wakes up
right
in the bed.
Right. Exactly. So I was assuming she was going to pass out and get caught with the folder, but Kevbot got back to her pretty damn quick for somebody that said to the night nurse, yo, can you help me out? My back hurts or something. He literally went to the night nurse, got some meds real quick and ran back to her. And she's screaming on the top of her lungs and the night nurse didn't hear. I don't know. But anyway,
sketch
episode ends. You know, the crazy lady turned into Kevbot just being like, are you okay? What's going on? Mm-hmm.
And she was like, what the actual fuck? And I was like, there you go, Alanka. There's like finally a reaction to your crazy
Blind Melon song and let's go.
Yeah. The only question I had about that, Jimmy, is like when she is in that sepia tone land, is it like actual like one for one time? Like you were saying,
right? Is she walking like she around was, like actually in the, yeah, I know what you're saying. Yeah.
Cause she was only, like you were saying, that thing was like 30 seconds, 45 seconds of her and that maybe a little bit longer in the hallway, you know. How long does Kevin getting treated? So that's my only thing. When she's in those visions, does she leave the building? I want to say no, because Kevin was like, I was talking to you and you're screaming the whole time. Mm-hmm. So
right. Yeah.
Before we like wrap up, final thoughts, final theories, whatever, I want to take this moment to really just put everybody's guess on the board of who will be the first one to die and attempt and to go through with the pact and reach from the other side. So let's just round the clock, give everybody's guess, and I can start because I thought about it a little bit. I'm going to guess that Natsuki is going to be the first one to die, and nothing to do with whoever's disease is really the worst or who's been there the longest. I'm thinking that it's going to be Natsuki because she already gave her story, and the only other option in my head because of that would have been Anya, but she's way too important, has way more going on. I'm going to put it on the board and think Natsuki's going to die first.
I think that's a sound logic there, man. I think I kind of agree.
Tristan makes me think maybe there's more to her because
but
she
I don't,
seems
yeah,
to be
like,
the connection.
Was she in the club before she got too sick?
I don't know.
You know, true. Maybe she was, and maybe she's about to die and they're going to be waiting for her. By the synopsis of the book, it seems like it really is a big plot point that, you know, if you die, try to contact and they're going to be looking for it. So we obviously know someone's going to die, and I don't know if it's going to be like, and then there were none kind of situation where they're just going to start dying and dying, or if it's going to be one dies and they're just, and the story only takes place in that time period. I think your logic is if we don't go with the one who's already really, really sick, I think you have sound logic, Luke.
Me too. I double down on that.
That's triple down, bro.
I'm just gonna say fucking say Anya, just because we saw her puking like getting really, really sick. So I hope not, because she's like my favorite character.
God, I really like the idea that she's been around forever. Mm-hmm. And yeah, damn, but I don't think it's gonna work. But
you're saying damn because it won't work, or damn because you didn't think of it?
No, well, both, but damn because I don't think it works now that the doctor talked to her, and you know. Because the doctor would have to be in on it because she's the main one who would know.
I'm watching the show and all I'm thinking, I'm through two episodes, I'm like, where the hell is Raul Coley? Where is Sheriff Hassan? Dude,
is
Raul Coley in it?
I didn't know that. All right, whatever. That makes me happy. I'm happy that he's gonna
be where he would be unless he's part of like one of their stories or something. Because
he's another hiker in the woods.
No, he
oh, she
knows.
We know she has
a
husband. She does have a husband or somebody she's living with, because she says we.
Mm-hmm. Lives like
it's,
a mile
it's
away.
The freaking, it's his character from iZombie. He's the morgue guy down there.
I love that.
Damn.
Dr.
Well, like,
Chakra Barney.
Do we think the night nurse is going to be anything besides just like, hey, like, don't get caught by the night nurse or.
Nah, yeah.
Okay. Just, so I'm just trying to like narrow down like the main characters here. So we got QB1, the doctor, and just the kids. Mm-hmm. And obviously
Pasta.
Yeah. Pasta. All right. I mean, I think
I'm good. Mary.
All right.
The only other thing I want to say is now that we talked about it, this is just a quick fun. Put it on the board. QB1 or Kevbot, who's going to be the sketch bag? If you think one of them will be.
Kevbot. I don't think either are, but Kevbot.
I would say Kevin's a sketch just because Mark has like another life somewhere. He's like, yeah, my other job. So I don't think he's always scheming something up there.
He could be freaking lying, man.
No, Kevin is pure. He's good. Kevin, I brought up the sketchy signs, but I just brought that up because of how they showed it. I don't actually believe he's going to be bad at all.
Yeah. So I go QB1. Yeah. Two and two for you too, man.
All right. We'll find
Kathleen
out.
Went neither though. So that's fine. That's definitely an option too.
I just want to say, I am like through two episodes, almost fully in more than like, you know, Haunting a Hill House. Like through two apps, I'm like, this story is already really, really good.
If everybody can go back and listen to our Hill House coverage, but if I'm remembering correctly, Paul, you did say that Hill House took a little bit for you, right?
To really reel you in. So yeah, maybe after I'd have to see what Hill House is at the end of episode.
I mean, that's why I'm saying like there's merit to what you're saying, because if you do, you're saying you like these first two better than Hill House's first two. And if you said in the coverage that Hill House took a little bit to reel you in, then that makes sense. I mean, I really honestly just like everything I watch for Flanagan, I'm just like, it's not Hill House, man.
Episode 2 is Cheryl's episode, which is probably my least favorite of the 10. So that makes sense that maybe after two, you needed 3, which was Theo's episode to be.
Yeah.
And I'm not going to say that I like this one better than any of the other 3 through 2 episodes yet. I don't really remember my instant thoughts through the first two episodes, but I will say that I think through two episodes, I like the most characters of any of the 4 shows right now. Like even more than Midnight Mass, which had a lot of good characters that kind of grew on me. I think the cast is the best, just like most entertaining characters. Like I'm interested in everyone basically, except for Sherry.
I just don't like her. Hill House just had phenomenal kid actors, phenomenal adult actors. I just want to put it on the board here, and it's totally like it's off. I it's confirmed wrong, but I was wondering because obviously in Midnight Mass we have the Carla Gugino Hot Mama cameo as the judge for QB1. When the devil first talks and she's in the shadows, I was wondering if that was going to be her, and then she comes out of the shadows and it's Stanton. But I was like, damn, I was hoping
means
was
we
be...
could still have her at some point though, which is
good. Could she be the Reaper with the hood still?
Could
oh yeah,
she could be anything.
Yeah, she could be.
Get
anything.
You a girl who could do anything. That's Hot Mama.
I love Hot Mama.
All right.
We ready?
Take us
all right, y'all. That's the episode. Episodes 1 and 2 of Midnight Club. If you are full spooky season like we are, you can go back and watch with us. We covered Hill House, Bly Manor, and Midnight Mass. We fucking loved it. It's really just us 4. So we had such a blast covering those. So go listen to that. We're also covering House of the Dragon right now and Vampire Academy and Rick and Morty. So talk about get you some guys who could do both. How about get you some guys who could do fucking 4 shows at once? You know what I'm saying?
Going right.
Anyway, if you like what you heard, give Binchtown TV a follow at Instagram, Twitter, any social media you can think of. That might not be true. Jimmy's here, so he's making me nervous. I've been crushing Vampire Academy outros, and now I can't do it because Jimmy's here. We also have BingeTownTV.com. You can go check us out, check us everything we're about. Go check us out on that. If you're feeling specifically generous, you can catch us at patreon.com/BingeTownTV. We do a lot of funky episodes on that, a lot of fun rogue episodes with all 7 of us. If you didn't know, BingeTown has 7 people on it. So that's Midnight Club. We'll be back with episodes 3 and 4 and fucking we're Binchtown TV. And thanks for listening. Love you.
Hail Satan. Love you.
Stay spooky.
Hail Satan.
You're listening to the Geekscape Network.